self-pity, self-justification, self-importance, self-condemnation, criticizing, negative thinking, vulgar immoral thinking, insincerity. Here's one for you kids. Procrastination, dishonesty, impatience, resentment, hate, enviousness, jealousy, laziness, lying, gossiping, selfishness, and fear. Those are the questions that I ask if they have any of those things. So they tell me which ones, so I check them as I go down. Ordinarily, most people have 10 or 12 of these defects of character, 10 or 12. I've only met one person in my experience that had all 20 of them, and you would be surprised who this was. This man was a very successful businessman. He came down from Tennessee, and he was a vice president of a large manufacturing concern up there, and he had a tremendous job and a lot of bonuses, and he had everything that any person could want financially and so forth, and was well set up socially and all that sort of thing. And he was a hot, real top-line executive. And he had every one of those things. And I said to that man, "You are the worst screwed-up bum I've ever met." And he admitted it. Okay. So there are the ones we ask about. But usually people have 10 or 12. I had a girl come down from South Carolina once that only had, she had 19. She almost was perfect. But she missed it by one, the dear thing. Now, it's very plain. Those are the things we have to find out in a moral inventory. Not the details of your transgressions, but what caused them. What brought you around to do all those things. So here's what we do. We find out what these things are and what happens. The fifth step says, I admit it to God, myself, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. Not the wrongs themselves, that a lot of people think. It's the nature of our wrongs. It reads very plainly there, and people miss that entirely. It's the nature of the wrongs. Okay. It says, I admit it to God, my new manager, myself, and to another human being. I'm the other human being he's admitting it to. Why should it be another human being? Why God and yourself another human being? This is scripturally correct. It says in a good book, where two or three are gathered together in my name, there will I be also. So this guy's there with me before his new manager. The three of us are together making this admittance, see? All right, then listen to the next step. Listen to this one. We were entirely ready. Ready for what? We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. All of them, it says. Entirely ready to have God remove. Why God remove? I can't remove them. I admit it in the first step that I'm powerless. My life's unmanageable. So my manager has to help me with this. That's what I hired him for. If you have a manager, why don't you use him? What are you paying them for? So my manager's going to help. So I'm entirely ready. It doesn't say partly ready. Alcoholics are entirely in all everything they do. We're extremists. We never do anything halfway. So I'm entirely ready, what? For God to remove all these defects. I'm very frank to admit to you that a few defects of character I'd rather keep. They're lots of fun. They're fun things. But our program does not give me that option. It's all or nothing at all if I want to get the best out of this. If I start cutting corners, I'm going to get myself just so much more miserable. I'll never get the element in what I'm looking for, right? So, I'm entirely ready to have God remove them all. Let George do it. Here's something you can stick over on George. Let him take them away from you. So you have to ask him, see? So in seventh step, I says, I humbly asked him to remove my shortcomings. humbly asked him. I didn't make a deal with him like I used to do. God, if you'll get me out of this mess, I'll be a good boy. I'd get in some kind of a bind. I'd say, God, help me. I'm in a trouble here. I'll be a good boy. I'll never run out with Sadie Glutz again. I'll behave myself. If you just get me out of this mess. A deal. Always a deal. It never worked. So we have to learn how to humbly ask him. Throw ourselves on his mercy. He will do anything we ask if we believe he will. You got to believe he will. If you don't believe it, forget it. You got to believe it. So it tells me anything that you ask believing, you'll receive. And all of your needs will be taken care of. I need to be fixed. And he'll fix me if I humbly ask him. So on the seventh step, my boy or girl is down on her knees again, and we have another talk with the manager. And we talk, admit all these things, and I have to utter the prayer first, and he or she repeats after me. And every one of those items that is checked, I mention, and ask God to remove this, and he asks God to remove it. And we thank him for it. And do you know something? Don't fall out of your chair. They're gone. They're gone. They're gone. He'll take all this stuff away from you. You no longer will have all these defects of character. He'll take them away. And this is what causes us to get in all this mess we're in all the time, with these defects. He takes them like that because he promised he would. He told me, anything you ask believing, you'll receive. And if you believe he'll do it, he'll do it. So then after you pray to him and talk to him, thank him for it and assume that it's happened. And it has happened. Now that sounds ridiculous to a lot of people, I'm sure. I'm only talking about what happens. This is experience. It's what a lot of people have done. And I've seen it over and over and over. You people here, I'll tell you, most people in AA have no conception of the power of God. They have no conception of what... It tells me in the good book that he's my father, and he has great storehouses of wonderful things, and he wants me to have the best of everything. God wants me to be healthy. He wants me to be prosperous. He wants me to be happy. He wants me to be useful. And this is how we prepare for it. You can't tell me that I'm unhealthy. I'll run a race with a lot of you birds, and I'm 80 years old. Yeah? You girls look out, too. Yeah. I have a good life. I have a wonderful life. I don't say everything is beer and Skittles every day, because we all have problems, and you're going to have problems all your life. But when you get into this program, you will know how to handle problems, because you don't have to do it yourself anymore. You don't have to connive out of things anymore. You got a helper. You got a manager to help you now. This is as simple as it is. Believe it. Don't look at me so damn funny, but it's true. It's true. Okay. So I humbly ask them. After the seventh step, I say this to every one of those persons that I'm working with. Grace does the same thing. She does this too. We have what we call a fixing room in our house. She always takes them back in the fixing room, but I take them out on the porch. She always goes in the fixing room. We have a fixing room in Eureka, California. We got them up in New York State. We got a fixing room every place we go where they have retreats. She uses that fixing room like you wouldn't believe. And she went up there in Northern California one time. I got the biggest charge out of it. They have a sheriff up there of that county. That guy is about 3 times my size. He's like this. He's about 6'8", this guy. Weighs 300 pounds. And he's all man. I mean, he's not fat and flabby. He's man. He's a muscle. She gets that great big guy on his knees there alongside her. She was almost lost. I couldn't even see her. And that guy gave his heart to Christ, to Jesus, and changed his life like that. He's the greatest guy. You want to meet him sometime. If he pinches you, tell him you belong to AA, he'll let you out. But he's a great fella. But when I see some of the things that happen in this, it's to most people it would be unbelievable, but it happens. So after the seventh step, I tell everybody this. I tell them this. You are now the cleanest person in the world. You do not have one thing against you. God has forgiven everything you've ever done. I don't care what kind of crud you've been into. You've asked forgiveness, and he has given it to you. You're forgiven everything you've ever done. I said, you are as clean as a driven snow. Nothing against you. He holds nothing. And when God forgives you, he forgets. It says in a good book, he will remember it no more. It'll be as far as the east is from the west. So your sins are forgiven. You're clean. All right. Now what do you have to do? You have to keep it clean. Everything's gone. I like to put it this way to a person. I generally do. I say, your life is like, you know what a tape recorder is, if you don't ask him. We have tape recorders. We all know what how to operate a tape recorder. And it goes along and it picks up everything we're saying. Well, maybe you want to erase that thing, that tape. It's a lousy one, so you don't need it. You want to use it for something else, so you erase the tape. You just run it without talking in there. It erases it, see? Your life is this way. When you were born, it's like your life started on a tape. Everything you have done, good, bad, and otherwise, is on that tape. After that seventh step, the tape is erased. There is no more record of your life. It's gone. It's gone. So you start on a new tape. See? That's the way I like to put it. Now, you have to keep it clean. Our program is divided into four phases. First phase of our program is step one. That's a step of admittance. I admit I'm powerless over alcohol and my life's unmanageable. Second phase is a second through seventh step. That's submission, where I submit my will and life without reservation to the care of God. I accept him fully and completely and turn my life over to him and dedicate my life to him. That's your second phase. Third phase is restitution. After the seventh step, I give these people some papers, pens, send them into their room. We're through for the day. I take one day to go through the first seven steps. So they take this, go to bed, they sit down there and write out all the restitution they owe. And I tell them who to put on that paper. Start with your own family. Your wife or husband, your mother, father, sisters, brothers, aunts, uncles, cousins, and on and on and on. Your neighbors, the people you work with, the people you've cheated, the people you owe money to, and everybody that you owe anything to, in apologies or otherwise, put it on that paper and bring it to me in the morning. And they bring this thing to me in the morning with all these details of those different people. Some of these people are dead and gone, some of them have disappeared, but they put it down just the same, everybody. They bring it to me, and I go over it with them and tell them what to do in every instance. Tell them how they should make the restitution. Any new person coming in AA should never, never try to go through this restitution step alone. He should have help by some person who is knowledgeable and understands and has a loving attitude. And has a little smarts about him. Because you can go out in your enthusiasm and cause a carnage by going out and telling people things involving someone else. And that's a very easy thing. We can't go out and get our skirts cleaned at the expense of someone else. I'll give you an example. Some time ago, quite a bit ago, I happened to be at a meeting one time down in Winter Park at noon. I think Grace was in the hospital at the time, I believe, and I used to stop at this meeting every once in a while at noon because I passed there going back and forth to the hospital. And they have a meeting every noon, so I went in there, and I'm a people listener as well as a people watcher. I listen to people when they talk in AA, and I hear all that wisdom going around those tables. Everybody talking, nobody knows what they're talking about. And I hear people talking, I hear them hollering help. I hear always hear two or three of them that are screaming, they need help. But they don't know it themselves, and nobody else seems to pay much attention or know it either. So I go up to this person after the meeting, and I introduce myself and tell them if they want some help on such and such, I'll be glad to talk with them or find someone else to talk to them. This particular day, I did this very thing. I mentioned this when I was talking. I had my turn to talk, and I told him that. This fellow and another fellow and a girl came to me after the meeting, three of them. That doesn't very often happen, that many come. So I made appointments for them to come to the house, and this fellow, this one man, he wasn't even supposed to be in Orlando that day. He left West Palm Beach, and he was on the way to Alberta, Canada, to his folks. He was going to go up there to live. He'd been living in Florida for some time, and he was leaving to go back home. He'd been sober about 2 years, dry. And he didn't know any more about this program than a hog knows about Sunday, really. He just had this peripheral stuff that people get around AA. And he heard me say this, and this guy is worried, he's miserable, he's not feeling good. And he just stopped there to go to a meeting. He had no intention of staying in Orlando. He was on the way through. He was passing through. So I told him to come out the house the next day, and he was there. He stayed around for several days. He didn't go home. He didn't go up there. And his course was misdirected all of a sudden. I took him through these steps. Now let me tell you why I'm telling you this long story. When it came to restitution, this guy had one that really hurts. He had been in the antique business with a pal of his, and they stole over $30,000 worth of antiques from some woman who was in the antique business in a big way, and she did not know that these two guys did this. She didn't know. She might have missed her stuff, which undoubtedly she did, but she never dreamed that these are the two guys that ripped her off. Now, this fella had a partner who was in this scam with him. Now, he couldn't go and tell that woman that the two of them ripped her off, but he had to go tell her that he did, and he's stuck for $30,000. And he is paying that woman. And he didn't even have a job when he found this out, but he's at it now, and he will make the money eventually and get that paid. Now, that's something, that's an extreme case. But in restitution, most of the restitution demands that we come and make apologies to people. And it'll happen to you like it happened to me. Some of them will say, that's fine, old boy, good luck. Other ones say, okay, you'll quit, you're trying to do something, just leave me alone. They'll tell you that. Whether they accept your apology or not, you hope they do, but they don't all do it. But you've done what you're supposed to do. And that's the program, that's on them now. It's not on you. It's not your problem anymore. It's their problem. You see how you can stick it over on somebody else? We always like to stick something on somebody else. Now, obviously, there are people whom you cannot make restitution to because you don't know where they are. They've moved out of your orbit or they're dead. What then? That still has to be done. So you ask your new manager to handle that for you. Isn't that simple? What do you got a manager for? He'll do the things you can't do. He tells me that I can do anything, accomplish anything. Between he and myself, anything can be accomplished. Myself, I can't accomplish much. But with him, I can accomplish anything. So he'll do this for you if you ask him and thank him for it. So leave it go. But the things, the people that we can contact, we are obliged to do that and make our apologies. Bingo. That's it. All right. We have taken these seven steps, and then we we're taking care of our restitution. It's going to be done. Now listen to this very carefully, because people have accused me of rewriting AA. Clarence says we don't need the steps. That's, you know, you hear some of the flakiest stuff around AA. After we have taken nine steps, after we have done nine steps, is that plain? Not read them, not listened to them, but done them. Did you notice that every one of those steps required us to do something? Every one of them required action. And how many people have done this action? Ask yourself, look around your AA groups and find out. Precious few of them have. That's why so many people are constantly in a sweat about something. They have no peace in their life. Always ready for an upset of some kind. And if you want upsets, you can find all you want right here in AA. Well, after taking 9 steps, forget them. Forget them. You don't need them anymore. I hear people say, oh, I'm having an awful time with step 5. Oh, what a time I'm having step 4. What an awful... Hell, they'd never been in steps at all. They wouldn't be talking so asinine. No, they haven't been there. Once you take them, forget them. You don't need them anymore. The only time you'll ever have to refer to those first 9 steps is when you're trying to explain them to somebody like I'm trying to do. You have to know what they're all about. But as far as your own use is concerned, you've used them, and they've done what is required. Now you have done 3 phases. You've done admission, submission, and restitution. Now we go into the 4th phase, which is construction. Here is where we construct our life. You live on the last 3. Now, isn't that simple? I don't have to live on 12 steps. I only got 3 that I have to be concerned about, the 10th, 11th, and 12th. The 10th step is another inventory step, but it has absolutely nothing to do with step 4, which also is an inventory step, but it's a different kind. Step 4 says we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. It don't say that in this step 10. You notice this continuing, it says continue to take a personal inventory. That's not a moral inventory, it's a personal, and it says something else. And when we were wrong, we promptly admitted it. Boy, there's a squeaker for you. When did we ever admit we're wrong? An alcoholic won't admit anything. He won't admit it's raining outside, it might involve him in something, or the sun's shining out here. Don't admit it. Don't say anything. Keep your peace. Keep your peace. If you don't believe that, I don't know if I said this before around here, but I don't suppose any of you people ever been in court. But I think you ought to go down some Monday morning to your municipal court, because you're paying those birds down there. You ought to find out what they're doing with your money. And you get down there, and Monday's a good day to go, because over the weekend, the gendarme has picked up a lot of drunks and thrown them in a tank. And so Monday morning, they come up before the judge. So here comes this rummy up before the judge in the morning. And he's standing there like this, you know. He's trying to shake this drunk out since Saturday night or Friday night or whenever they picked him up. And he is sick, and he's scared, and he's got the shakes and the shivers and what have you. And the bailiff reads off all these things that he did. He went driving while intoxicated. He sideswiped a police car. He went through a plate glass window and got out and fought the police. A few more things happened, and he landed in the cooler, in the drunk tank. So the bailiff reads all this stuff off, and the judge looks at this donkey sitting and standing in front of him, that rummy. He says, you were drunk. No. No, 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 not me. Well, you were drinking. Well, after a lot of that hassle, this rummy will finally break down and admit to having had a couple of beers. You look out for these guys that drink a couple of beers or a menace. I never heard of any guy getting in trouble drinking whiskey. But those guys with a couple of beers, they are world beaters. So there we are. That's admittance. Don't ever admit anything. Don't admit it. Never. That's a cardinal rule for rummy. But here we are. We're admitting things. We continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, we promptly admit it. Now let me explain this. The 10th step is a check on my daily life, and I'll tell you how I do mine, because I have to have a simple program. I'm not smart enough to have these complicated programs that people learn about in these dry-out joints, and these psychiatrists teach them. I have to have something simple, because I'm a simple guy, and I have a very great lack of education, so I don't know any 5-syllable words or anything like this, so let's get simple. So here's the way I do my 10th step. It says I continue personal inventory. What does that mean? This is a personal check on my daily life. What did I do today? They talk. What did I do today? They talk about day by day. You hear all these birds talking about a day at a time. Ask most people in an AA group what that means. They say, I hope I stay sober a day at a time. Yeah, idiot. If you ever take these steps, don't ever say that. It's an insult. Forget it. You don't say sober a day at a time. You live a day at a time. That's a lot different than staying sober a day at a time. So it says we continue to take personal inventory. What is that? Here's the way I do mine. At night, my day is over with. And Grace and I always have prayer time at night. She has hers, I have mine. Sometimes we have it together. However, we have it. After this is concluded, I'm alone. I'm lying there in bed with my own thoughts. And I go over my day. And I analyze, where have I been today? What have I done? What's transpired? Who did I run into? Did I do anything worthwhile today? And if I have, I give myself a pat on the back. I say, oh boy, you get a star for that one. On the other hand, maybe I have abused you, or I owe you an apology, and I've insulted you. It says here, we promptly admitted, I have to come out and make my apologies to you right away. That's my first priority tomorrow morning. I can't wait till some time that's convenient for me, because the program insists that I promptly do it. If I don't do it promptly, it's not going to get done. And that procrastination will come back in that I got rid of once before. See? So that's promptly. I'll bet you, how many people here do that? You'll all be doing it now that you know better. So it says here, I continue to take personal inventory, my daily life, every day. And when I'm wrong, I promptly admitted it. And we all make mistakes, kids. That's why they put rubbers on lead pencils. You're not going to live a blameless life. We all make mistakes. You can't help it. We're living in a society where we're with people. Life is earnest. Life is real. And there's more rascals around than there are the other type. So we got more opportunity to get in trouble than we have of staying straight. You don't believe this? Think about your associates and tell me that I'm wrong. Okay. That's your 10th step. This is what keeps us straight every day. Keeps our life straight. Keeps us clean. 10th step. Listen to this 11th step. This is a humdinger. A lot of words in it. It says in that 11th step that we're seeking something. It says, I sought through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with God, praying only for knowledge of His will for me and the power to carry that out. A lot of words. Let's break them down. I'm seeking something through prayer and meditation. Well, what's the difference? What is prayer and what is meditation? Prayer is talking to my new manager, and meditation is listening to him. See? I have observed that the good Lord gave me two ears and one mouth. That ought to suggest something to us. We should do some listening as well as talking, maybe twice as much. If we don't listen for our orders, we're not going to get them. So it says in a good book, be still. Be still. And that's what we do in this 11th step. Be still and listen to him talk to us. So I'm seeking something through prayer and meditation. What am I seeking? I'm seeking to improve my conscious contact with God. Now, what does that mean? That means I have to keep selling myself the idea that he's right here. He's as close to me as you are. I can talk to him, I can feel him, I can get answers from him. He's not way out in the blue yonder where he's inaccessible, where I used to think he was. He's right here. Remember the time those birds landed on the moon up there? Remember those first fellows that got on that moon and the guy jumped up there, the huge, big leap for humanity? What did they do up there? They talked to him up there. Remember that? They talked to him on the moon. And we were talking to him down here. So he really is accessible. I don't care where you are. Eh? You can't get away from him. He's here. He's everywhere. So I sought through talking to him and listening to him to prove my conscious contact with him. And I have to keep selling myself that he's here and not way out in the blue yonder. He's here. Then Al tells me what I'm praying for. Ask a lot of people in an AA group what they pray for. You know the answer you'll get? I pray for sobriety. Oh, slob him. You don't pray for sobriety. You have sobriety. Thank him for it. We have a lot of things we can pray for. We have to, one thing, we should pray for other people. We should pray for guidance and direction. We should never do anything without asking the Lord first his direction. And boy, you'll wind up in some of the funniest things sometimes by doing that. I know I was a salesman, and I'd have plans made to be a certain place at a certain time. When that time came, I wasn't there at all. I was somewhere else. And I had nothing to do with this. In retrospect, I can see with that place that I did wind up, I was supposed to be there. Eh? I tell you, the things that happened in my life, I could write books about it, and they were true. And not only my life, I see it in so many other people, too. I wish it could be in everyone's. It can be if you will accept this. So there I am. I'm seeking through talking to him and listening to him. Faith comes through the spoken word. We speak this and we get faith. So it tells me what I'm praying for. What does it say? It doesn't say sobriety. It says praying only for knowledge of his will for me and the power to carry that out. What do you want me to do, boss? I'm your boy. You're my manager. Tell me what you want and give me the strength to do it. Boy, he'll tell you what to do. I'm not kidding you. He'll put you in places you never dreamed of being. I guarantee you, I'll promise you that. And I also know this. It tells me in the good book that he'll never put anything on me that he won't give me the power to execute. So what do you want me to do, boss? And give me the power to do it. He'll give it to you, boy, double. Believe me, you'll get it given to you. You might not like all the orders he gives you. You don't like all the orders from the boss gives you where you work either, but he pays you. And this boss of you that got now pays you a lot better than he does. But remember that. So you got to do what he wants you to do. We are here to do service. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with our new manager. Praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry it out. Now what happens? Step 12. You hear so much about, I hear about 12 stepping. I'm going 12 stepping. I'm going 13 stepping. Another gal and I decided one time down at a retreat down in Texas to get a 14th step. I thought we needed a 14th step. So we got up a 14th step. Love them and leave them. Well, anyway, it says here, something happened because we took these steps. Having had a spiritual experience, how did we get this spiritual experience? As the result of these steps. We took these steps, and as a result, we had a spiritual experience. And what is that, pray tell? You'll hear people in AA say, come and change your thinking. Change your thinking. If we could think, we would never come here. It isn't your thinking. In Isaiah, it says the whole head is sick. And boy, our head is sick. This blubber of ours is when we get here, we're anything but well up here. We're very unwell. So, it says here, having had a spiritual experience as the result of these steps, we took these steps and we had this change, this spiritual experience. And what was that? That's not a change here, not a change in your thinking. It's 14 inches lower. It's down here. See? That's where the change comes, down here. One of the greatest things that ever happened to me, I think I've told some people here this, and it bears repeating because people forget about 90% of what you tell them anyway. When I was attending Oxford group meetings at T. Henry's home in Akron. There was a great big old boy there that took some kind of a shine to me, and he was a real great big rough character, this guy. And I was halfway scared of this bird, Bill Van Horn. Doc fished him out of a nut factory, and he came into the group, and he was stayed sober the rest of his life. And Bill used to think a lot of me for some reason, or I don't know why. I guess he collected old cats and dogs or something. But anyway, this was the way it was. And Bill always made a point of talking to me after meetings down there in Akron, in that Oxford group place. So he'd get me behind T. Henry's library table where I couldn't get away from him. And this big old bird used to tower over me like a moose. And he would talk to me, and as I say, I was half scared of this guy because he got out of a nut factory, and he was such a big man and picking on me all the time. I didn't know what his all of his designs might be. Well, anyway, one night he got me back at that table again. He said this to me. He says, "Clarence, I'm going to give you the answer to this whole ball of wax. I'm going to give you something here, and I want you to read it. I want you to memorize it. I don't want you to ever forget it." This is the way we got suggestions in those days. So he takes his billfold out and starts unloading all this debris on the table there. And he's looking for something. He finally finds what he's looking for. It's a piece of paper, and he hands it to me. And I look at that piece of paper, and lo and behold, it's a Bible verse. And I look at that Bible verse, and I look at this big moose in front of me. Thought, well, maybe they let him out of that place too soon, you know? But I did what Bill told me to do. I read that, I reread it, and I reread it, and reread it. And it has become one of my very favorite verses. And you listen to this and see if this doesn't hit the nail right on the head. It's the 2 Corinthians, the 5th chapter and the 17th verse. And it reads this way. "Therefore, if any man be in Christ, he is a new creature. Old things are passed away. Behold, all things are become new." Think of that. If any man be in Christ, he is a new creature. All that old garbage is gone. We got rid of it in this 12-step program. We accepted God as our new manager. He took all this garbage away from us. It's laying back here. Old things are passed away. Behold, all things are become new. After the 7th step, we get a new tape to work on. That old tape is wiped out. How about that? Where can people go today? Really, people, a lot of civilians. They don't have what you and I have. They don't have the opportunities you and I have. They're going to smolder and rust and do all this stuff, and very few of them ever have a chance. Millions of them go to church every Sunday, and they're all going to hell. I'm in it. What do they do? Don't think I don't know something about this, kids. You know, I'm a rummy, and when I get mixed up in anything, I go the whole way. No matter what I get into, I'm gone the whole way. They pick on me, and they make me do something, or I'm an easy mark or something. Because I know when I went into the American Legion, at no time I'm an officer in the Legion. I'm the finance man looking after their dough. That was a dangerous thing. Then I go into the lodge. I become an officer in the lodge. I leave there. I get talked into joining a church, much against my will. And I joined this church. My ex-wife got me into this. She had been in this church all her life. Her old man was a preacher in that church. And she had three brothers that were preachers and a couple of cousins a preacher in that denomination. And we wound up, they were going to organize a church in Florida. She reads that in the paper, nothing to do, we go down there. And here's a bunch of old ducks that are retired, 70, 80, years old, these people are all, none of them under 70, I'm sure. And I go in there, I'm about 52 years old, and they look at me like I'm a kid. And immediately they got me running errands and doing things for them. So they organized this church, and I really got buggered into this. And we became charter members, the first 50 people on the rolls, you know. So I, out there, we had our first classes in a schoolroom. I'd go out Sunday morning, help them set up their altar, and do their ushering and, you know, do all the legwork for these old codgers. And finally, the synod bought them a building, and they bought a citrus grove and cut down some of the trees and built a building that was supposed to be our recreation hall eventually, but we moved in there for our church services. By this time, the place is expanding, so little Caesar here, by this time, they came around and I had a battle with them on this. They wanted me to stand for ordination as an elder, and I resisted this with all 4 feet, but they overcame me. I got pressured to try to keep peace in the family, so I was ordained the elder, which is one of these people that's supposed to help take care of the spiritual needs of the flock, you know. Well, the next year I'm president of the Bloomin' Church, and for 3 years I'm president, and I'm doing everything in that church, and they decide they want to build a church, and these old ducks are all retired. And I said, well, go get one of these fundraising agencies to do it. But those old Dutchmen don't want that. You know who they picked on to raise the money? Yeah. So I was already getting the money for the current expenses. So I raised for that church. Now, this is 25 years ago, I want you to know. I raised $350,000 for that church, and they never had a mortgage on the church. It's a rummy does this stuff. Believe me, boy, they had visitors coming from the north. They all got tapped. Everybody got tapped. And that money came in, and they never had a mortgage. I told that preacher, I says, don't ever talk to this congregation about money. I'll do the pitching for the dough. You just keep quiet. You can make one sermon a year on, as far as money's concerned. And don't you talk about any money for building a church. If they're going to get mad at somebody, let them get mad at me. So we got the church built. So after the church is built, I could stand here and tell you for a week about the experiences in that deal. I wouldn't do it again for $7 million, but I wouldn't take that much for the experience, believe me. Anyway, that's the way a rummy will do. I go into some workplace, I wind up sales manager. Why is this? I come to AA and I own it. There's a guy over in Tampa, he was a funny guy, I used to get a kick out of him, Big John. He had a sense of humor, great big Irishman. And his wife was very active in Al-Anon. She's always Al-Anoning all over the place, you know. And he gets so damn disgusted with her and her Al-Anon activities. And finally, he came into AA. He came over to my group in St. Pete one time, and he's talking about his wife. He says, Clarence owns AA, and his wife there is the president. But this is the way it is. Well, this is what an alcoholic does. We never sit. A real rummy don't ever sit in the back seat. He's got to be out there running. Or if he don't, somebody pushes him out there and makes him run. We are the kind of people that do things. We are doers. We do things. Naturally, we're going to make mistakes, because people that don't make mistakes never do anything. But the people that make mistakes are going to be doing. People do something, are going to make mistakes. You can't help it. But we learn from them. We learn from the expense of other people, too. I don't have to learn everything the hard way. I've learned a lot of things from other people's experience, and I still do. We have a marvelous program. Having had a spiritual experience as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to other alcoholics. Did you get that word, alcoholic? One of the big stumbling blocks in our fellowship today is a lot of people are trying to be everything to everybody, and we just are not equipped to do that. The name of our book is Alcoholics Anonymous, and it says so on the cover, and it very plainly, in plain English, that says Alcoholics Anonymous. See that? That does not say Dopes Anonymous. That does not say Fatsos Anonymous. That does not say Nose Pickers Anonymous. It says Alcoholics Anonymous. And we have all we can pray over to take care of alcoholics, and that's our ministry. Now, there are places and facilities for these other people, and that's where they should be directed. But when people come here, we are to qualify them as alcoholics. And if they are alcoholics, we have something for them and they have something for us. But a lot of these other people, all they have for us is grief. And they'll tear our program apart and tear our AA apart. And that is happening in a lot of places, and don't you think it isn't. Kiddos, we get around a lot of places in this country and out of this country, and we see AA in all of its different dimensions. And we walk into a town, it don't take us very long to find out what's going on and what kind of a tempo that AA has in that town. All you have to do is sit in a meeting and listen for a while. And some of the stuff I hear, I do not like. It shakes me up. Tell you why. We have a very simple program for alcoholics. And alcoholics, we have a ministry in alcoholics, you and I. You and I are the only people, history has proven this, that have the capacity to steer the alcoholic on the path where he's going to get well and stay that well and get useful. Nobody else can do that. I try to tell you how old this thing of alcoholism is and the different things that have been tried. I think I told someone the other night, I have a book this thick at home about the history of alcoholism, written in early 1800s, this book. And it tells about the different things, I mean, for centuries past, what people did to try to modify the actions and the drinking of alcoholics, and they all failed. Why? We have the combination, and the only way we succeed is in partnership with our new manager. And I don't say you won't stay dry without that, but you're not going to have much fun doing it. We're always going to be wondering what's going to happen next. I don't wonder what's going to happen next. Everything's going to be all right. Every day's Christmas. Every day's Christmas. I have a good life. Grace has a good life. We have a lot of good friends. One time in my life, I didn't have a friend in the world. Not a friend. I had one cousin that would still regard me. She was all right. We were kids together, but she was the only person I could ever say that had any regard for me at all at one time in my life. Today, I can go any place in the country and out of the country, and I have friends. I said something the other night to somebody. I could make a round-the-world tour here. It wouldn't cost me 5 cents. I go and visit you for a while, and you put me up for 3 days, and I go somewhere else to your house, and so on and so on. I believe that fish and company smell after 3 days. So I would make my visit short and sweet, and I'd be welcome when I come back. Yeah, we can do this. Before, there wasn't nobody let allow me in their house, let alone have friends. You're the same way. We got a fellowship here that's the grandest thing that ever happened in history. And it only happened a little over 40 years ago. And you and I are the chosen people, the chosen people. We're chosen for this, and since we're chosen for this, we have a responsibility. And the responsibility is working with people like ourselves. We relate to the alcoholic. We can't relate to these other people. There's differences there. People asking me around here today about drugs. Drugs. When you're talking about drugs, you got to figure out what kind of drugs you're talking about. I'll say this, that there are a lot of pill heads belong here. All the difference between them, they chew their liquor instead of drink it. But there's other people that get on hard drugs. There are other facilities for them, and we don't relate to those people for the simple reason that things happen to them that don't have to happen to us, and that will happen to them. A hard drug user, eventually gets into the place where he has to pay $50 to $200 a day to support his habit. Where is he going to get it? Where? He has to turn to crime. He goes and steals. The girls steal. They do shoplifting. Then they get into prostitution. It inevitably follows. It's crime, crime, crime. Those people have to be criminals. An alcoholic isn't a criminal. He's a damn petty thief. He's not a criminal. He don't go out killing anybody for a drink. He don't have to. All we have to do, if he hurt badly enough, you don't have the price of a drink, you can go down to the You just walk through any supermarket and pick up some lotion and go to it. That'll relieve the tension for the time being. Or drink some of the vanilla extract or something. I drank worse stuff than that. When I was drinking, when I was on the bum, I paid 7 cents a pint for my booze and I bought it in a wallpaper store. I would welcome vanilla extract. Don't ever try that stuff. You have to work yourself down to that. It takes seasoning. So an alcohol is available and it's accessible, where hard drugs cost a lot of money. So it brings people into other things they have to survive. And we don't have to do that. All right. We went over the steps. Anybody have any argument or any questions about it? I told you I'd go through these steps, this program, tell you what it was today.
Can I ask something?
Yes, who speak? Stand up.
How long does it take?
I didn't hear you. I take 2 days. I give them 7 steps the first day and take them through the rest of it the next day. Tell them how to live the next day.
How long is 2 days? 16 hours?
It could be. I've talked to people for 3 and 4 and 5 hours before they've ever gotten ready to go into these steps. I will not chance ruining a person's opportunity to live by rushing them. Sometimes I have to explain things. A person is so bloody screwed up. And so you have to just ease them along and get them sold on certain things. I have talked to some people 3 and 4. I've talked to some person a whole day and never took them through till the next day. You have to, it depends on an individual. Yes, sir. I write them down. No, I write them down. You don't write anything. I don't want you. I can't read your writing. I can only read my own.
Is it just as simple to say, like, I'm guilty of criticizing
and... Yes, that's right. That's exactly it. That's right. You tell me which one of these you're guilty of, and I check them. See, I have it written down on a paper when you come. So I check the ones you tell me that you're selfish and you're this and that and the other thing. Yes, sir. Well, you have to disseminate what a drug addict is. As I mentioned before, I say there's certain people, these pill heads that chew them, most of them belong here. But we've had them with us forever. But these people that are using those hard drugs that cost them all that dough, there's another facility for them where they can get along much better than here, and we can't do anything for them, really. Well, I don't get new people, but if I took a new person through, I would get him, if he needs sobering up, I get him sober, and after he's sober a few days, then I take him through the steps. But I qualify him before that. I want to know what he really wants to do about it, because I'm not going to fool with him unless if he's in some kind of a panic and just wants to get out of a temporary problem. I'm not interested in that. But if I get a person who really wants to quit drinking, I do it in a few days. Yes, sir. I have no problem with a higher power, because I don't mention him as a higher power. My higher power has a name. And the sooner that fellow learns who that higher power is, the sooner he's going to get well and quit all this this lamp post and all this other crap. No, I don't have that problem. I'll tell you why. This man has come...